Okay, welcome back. So perhaps as you're tracking, this month we're exploring the Parami of Renunciation. And I was also asked to give a talk around climate change and the climate crisis in honor of Earth Day. We try to do this every April to just bring attention to this ongoing issue that we are facing as human beings. And these actually go well together, the topic of renunciation and the topic of climate change. Because to reverse climate change or to slow it or stop it, we need renunciation. We need to bring this quality of renunciation to our actions, in both as individuals and also as a whole culture, on all the different levels, from the culture of our local culture to the nation to the world, all the way up to the global levels. Now, if you're like me, the word renunciation isn't always maybe our favorite parami, right? The sense of giving up, of going without, of doing without. A sense of maybe there's not enough, or there's not enough for me to go around, or I should give up something that I don't really want to. I want to keep it. Right? So how do we work with renunciation, especially around this very important issue of climate change? Now, if you see renunciation in isolation, sometimes we have that sense. But if instead we look at it in the context of all the paramis, it starts to make more sense, especially if you start to take some of the things we explored last week, or last month, or last year, I should say. So the first parami that we explored this year was generosity. And then the next one was ethics, or we can think of it simply as non-harm. These actually flow really well into the parami of renunciation. So I want to tie that into this whole topic of climate change. So renunciation is seen as this just beautiful and natural extension of these first two paramis of generosity and of sila, of ethics, of morality. And we can actually see that climate change provides a very powerful way for us to apply these teachings, to take them from this abstractness or this way of how we work with our own lives into how we actually are citizens of this world, global citizens. And actually, before jumping into that, exploring that, I want to go back to last year, to one of the defilements, the series of 3 months around the defilements of greed, of hatred, and delusion. Because these help us take how these first three paramis are in context, really balanced out by these paramis of generosity and of ethics and of renunciation. Because these paramis are really antidotes to those three defilements. Also, these defilements help us kind of understand why we're in this mess, this situation, this crisis of climate change. You know, we see them from the lens of greed and hatred and delusion. We can see why there's still this strong denial against it. How it's so hard to just do the obvious thing to stop climate change. I was looking online, and a website from the EU gave three main causes for global warming. Three, the top causes. One is burning fossil fuels like coal, oil, and gas, which produce carbon dioxide and nitrous oxide. The second one is cutting down forests. There's deforestation because trees help hold the carbon, help to absorb carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. When they're cut down, we lose that effect. And then finally, increasing livestock farming, and cows and sheep in particular produce large amounts of methane, which they digest for their food. So these three elements are one of the key things that are causing and maintaining climate change. Now, as I reflected on these three elements, they all, at some point in our history, and even today, do have benefit for us as human beings. Right? Fossil fuels allow us to have transportation, and for industry to do its work, for heating our homes. You know, that forests, we clear lands for maybe for farming or for development or for wood for our houses, and then livestock for food and clothing. But we've really gone overboard on all of those. We've gone to this place of causing harm to an environment by too much of all of those, that good thing. I was just reflecting in my own lifetime that the population of the world has almost doubled. It's almost doubled in these 50-some years I've been alive, to almost 8 billion people. So we take that population growth, and with still these three elements of fossil fuel and cutting down forests and livestock farming, all of those in the population has made this crisis become very real for us. So we take these three elements, these three actions. They started off beneficial in our lives as human beings, but they've grown into a crisis of global warming, particularly as you look at the lens of the three defilements, or three poisons, or the three unwholesome roots that we explored last year. Now, the last one, delusion, I want to actually start with that, because that's kind of the main one. Sometimes they say if you could had to go to a desert island and have only one book to read or one album to listen to, what would you pick? If you had one to work on, you would work on delusion. Because if you understand delusion, it transforms greed and transforms hatred. That's the core delusion, the core defilement that we're learning to work with as Dharma practitioners. With delusion, we just don't perceive clearly. We don't see what's actually right in front of our face. There's something that clouds us or obscures that, or we just ignore this reality. Or we also don't connect the consequences of our actions. We don't connect that, okay, this action I'm doing today has a consequence into the future. Just imagine if we could all get into a time machine and go forward, let's say 20 years or 30 years or 50 years, 100 years, and we looked at how the world would be, and we would see the devastation that climate change would cause. How much motivation would we need to make changes today? There wouldn't be much motivation needed because we could see it so clearly. We could see so clearly the consequences of our action. Because they're denied or they're delayed in time, they're that disconnection, there's this kind of abstractness to it, it's easy to ignore it, to avoid seeing in that. Even those who deny climate change, if they could see the world that their children and their grandchildren and their great-great-grandchildren have to live in, there would be no more argument, no more resistance. This delusion would just vanish in a moment of clear seeing. And this is the power of our practice, is to see in a clear way. Vipassana sometimes is translated as seeing clearly, seeing through delusion, to seeing something and how it actually is, that direct perception. And that direct moment of direct perception, that's what leads to wisdom. That's what allows suffering to fall away. So delusion in climate change, and we can look at the growing forest fires, we can look at the growing extremes of temperature, the extremes of weather patterns, there's all the storms, all these things are becoming more and more clear that we can see the impact of that. But yet it's kind of easy to say, okay, maybe not today, I should do something about that. So delusion maintains that. This is the power of delusion. It's a very powerful defilement that we work with, we learn to see. Learning to apply it to something as pressing as climate change is essential. Now, especially when we look at that first delusion, this first defilement in terms of the other ones, they start to make more and more sense. Because if we don't quite see clearly, then greed makes a lot of sense. It makes sense to go into this sense of scarcity or this sense of trying to get more and more, that feeding the hungry ghost. Because one of the major things that keeps these delusions alive, this not seeing this reality, is profit. Right? Now, profit is something that businesses need to have to succeed. Governments need to have profit. Individuals need to have profit. But how much is enough? and how much starts to go into this level of greed? When does our actions start to shift over to that? How much is that sense of sufficiency and abundance linked to our money? Is it as linked as we think it is? Is it as linked as we act like it is? Just, you know, you can see how this starts to tie back into renunciation. Also, the quality of greed has a sense of isolation, of a sense of me versus you, right? I need to have my own finances, my own money, my own wealth, and it's kind of a competition with you. There's since not enough for you, you know, for both of us, so only I can get mine. So some of that energy comes in as we contemplate these choices that we have to make as individuals, as a society. And from a dharmic perspective, the question is, do we see the world from isolation? Do we see it from a place of separation? Or do we start to see it from a place of interconnection? And this is a very essential aspect of the practice. Because we talk a lot about, you know, the insights of like non-self and the sense of seeing through impermanence. And a lot of the effect of those insights is that we see that we're not separate. And not in an abstract or intellectual way or a philosophy, but actually a direct knowing, a direct seeing of that in a relationship. As we've been exploring with generosity, as someone gives us a gift of generosity, it's like we're receiving that gift. As we give the gift of generosity, it's like we're both the receiver and the giver start to merge. We start to see the giver is actually the receiver and vice versa. So the defilement of greed, you know, how much of that drives our own personal actions? And sometimes greed is such a charged word, so you might translate into that sense of just that not enoughness, that wanting to not inconvenience ourselves, makes it a little bit more accessible because we don't like to feel like we're greedy, and yet we don't, by destroying out that, we don't see those subtle ways that shows up in our actions. And the third defilement is that of hatred. Yeah, the idea of hatred. Now, hatred, again, flows from delusion. You know, that sense of other, that pushing away that isolation perspective. I think we can also look at fear as another aspect of hatred. You know, that fear of losing, the fear of not enough, that fear of what the future will bring, fear of losing our profits, our lifestyle, fear of giving up our identity. And the identity, the sense of identity, I think is an important one to look at, because all of us have grown up, maybe most of us, I don't know all of us, but many of us have grown up in a world that it was, you know, having a car was a sense of status, a sense of having, you know, transportation, having autonomy, the sense of having, you know, all these kind of assumptions that were based upon having a fossil fuel based world. So we have to learn to challenge that and to look at that. And of course, there's particular people maybe who are listening whose lifestyle and very livelihood are dependent upon fossil fuels. So what happens to those people? And having them give up their identity around that, it's not a small thing. It really gets tied up, especially some of these kind of work environments or places. It's really tied up into who you are as a person is tied up in that particular work. So that's one of the other aspects of renunciation. Can we start to let go of that and help people navigate that distance, that change? Because making the changes necessary to stop climate change is going to cause pain. It's going to cause some suffering. You know, it's a short-term suffering or a limited suffering that there's much bigger benefit that comes from that. You know, so fear is this powerful force that arises. So how can we work with that in a skillful way, a way that helps people be able to release and relax into it? So these three unwholesome roots of delusion that just allows us not to see clearly, to not see the evidence that's in front of us, the greed that keeps us motivated to keep acting from that place of denial, of not giving up our cars and our normal reliance on fossil fuel, the fear, the hatred and fear that is more of that aggressive pushing away or that aggressive defensiveness of protecting. All these roots have the potential to unfortunately destroy the world as we know it. The impacts are so severe. So respecting that power in yourself, respecting the power of these three defilements, not to ignore them or deny, to pretend that they're not there, but actually turn toward them with interest, with clarity, with seeing, that starts to transform them. So in doing so, we can start to take the actions we can do personally. You know, what actions can I do? Are my choices of heating, my choices of transportation, choices of what I eat? Do I need to eat meat every day of the week? Can I have less, more renunciation around that, or become a vegetarian? These are all choices that we can explore. Going forward in time, you know, seeing the impact of those actions on those future generations, sometimes that brings that motivation that's not so helpful, not so accessible other times. Now, influencing those in power, I think, is also an important topic to explore for a moment. Because greed, hatred, and delusion is kind of the way the world operates. So sometimes you can try to help people see through the delusion, but greed and fear and hatred are also very powerful forms. And unfortunately, a lot of us as human beings are self-serving, right? So one of the powers we have is as voters, you know, who do we vote for? Who do we support? And that can help people, you know, trying to just stay elected by those who are willing to stop climate change. Let them know the personal pain of not being reelected. So these three unwholesome roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, and how they perpetuate this actions that are causing climate change. And these in turn, from a dharmic perspective, are affirming that sense of separation and isolation. Right? So three unwholesome roots. Now the paramis we can see as this antidote, this way of a brightening of looking at them, you know, a way of looking at this whole process, and it's much more interconnected. And for each one of us, there's many times when it's better to look at the defilements and see, okay, I want to work with my greed around this, my hatred around this, my delusion. Other times the paramis may give you more energy for it, because it gets a little heavy when we just talk about the defilements. It's like, okay, greed and hatred and delusion. We get that heaviness, and that tends to lead to paralysis. We enter the paramis, there's these positive ways of acting in the world, these positive ways of influencing our own actions and those around us. So these three paramis, in particular, you can think of them as three wholesome roots, right? The root of generosity, the root of non-harm, and the root of renunciation. Because they affirm, each of those, as we've been exploring, affirm the sense of interconnection. The interconnection, the interdependence. And with climate change, it helps us to extend that beyond our immediate, this lifetime, into the future lifetimes. I understand that the indigenous people of this land in Seattle, they would often reflect on how is this decision that we're making today going to affect not only the next generation, but the generation after that, the generation after that, out to seven generations. And can you imagine that wisdom and the impact of that, to go beyond this kind of narrow focus of just me and my immediate life, but how are my actions affecting the future? You know, what kind of legacy am I leaving for the future? What kind of legacy are we leaving? for the future. Taking that time machine out into the future, you know, what's the choices that we're making today? What are the fruits of those choices? Right? It could be, they could look at this time and age and say, wow, they really changed it. They really saved things. They really made the choices, the hard choices. And they made the world be able to be continuing how we know it. Or maybe they ignored it. Maybe they looked back and they just decided, okay, it's too much of a bother. It's too hard. The greed is too strong. The fear is too strong. The denial is too strong. And then this is the legacy that's left. It's kind of sobering to reflect on that, going out to your children's, your grandchildren, your great-great-grandchildren, all the way for seven generations. So as we start to do that, we let go of our narrow time focus, and generosity can actually come forth in that. Instead of this being the sense of renunciation being something that I'm really giving up, it's really an act of giving, a gift for the future, a gift for those who aren't here yet, people who will be here after I'm long dead. Because there's this awareness we have that our lives actually are short. There's this finiteness to them. And for many of us, all that's left is our actions, our legacy, if for better or for worse. This also starts to shift into this selfless perspective, you know, taking beyond my own narrow sense of me to that quality of interconnection. And this is a step that climate change asks us from a Dharma practitioners and everyone really, is to go beyond the selfless quality right now to the selfless quality that transcends time, imagining that our actions today have a direct consequence on those in the future, having generosity toward them. And this can be a beautiful way to reflect, like that actually brings much more energy. Sometimes we need the kind of the fire of looking at the delusions, the defilements of greed and hatred and delusion to motivate us. And sometimes we need that opening of the heart that the paramis give us, the opening of generosity. So next time you're making a choice to renounce something, to let go of something, to be aware of your actions and how they affect climate change, the next time you vote, the next time you communicate with a government official or a politician, and you do it in a way that's effective and powerful, reflecting it as an act of generosity. Generosity for this world, for the future generations. Now, generosity is the first parami, and the second parami is that of sila. So sometimes we translate that as ethics or morality or virtue. But we can boil it down to non-harm. So these two forces of generosity, of caring for others, for sharing our wealth, sharing our resources, sharing our energy, maybe renouncing to allow for others. And there's also the other side of it is the power of non-harm, to really deeply not want to cause harm to another person, to another being, to deeply not want to cause harm to those future beings. And just take a little bit of imagination and extrapolation. You know, how are my choices today around transportation and heating? How are they going to affect the future? How are my choices around forest products and all the things that revolve around that? How do those affect the future? My choices around what I consume. You know, how do they cause harm or potentially cause harm to those who aren't born yet? I heard someone, I think they were talking about a famous person, but I won't say the name just in case I'm wrong. But the analogy was that one of the issues around smoking is that the effects of the smoking are so delayed, right? So you may smoke as a teenager or something, and you think it's cool, but you don't realize that in 30, 50, 60 years, you could die from those choices. But the person was saying, you know, if you saw someone take a puff of a cigarette and they convulsed and died right away, you know, you connect the dots. Okay, this isn't good for my health. You would stop doing it. You want to be motivated to do that. And that's the tricky thing, is that we say, okay, what does it matter if I do this or that right now? I don't see the effects of it. That's why there's that sense of imagination, of extrapolation. How is my action here, even though it's indirect, doesn't mean it's not powerful. Doesn't mean it doesn't have a strong effect in the future. So sila, you know, how can I lead to this sense of realizing that my actions, even though I can't see them clearly, how they directly affect someone, I can see that their accumulation does come of effect. If everyone in this room, online or in person, really made a strong commitment to do everything they could around climate change, that would be an impact. That would be a positive impact. And everyone that you knew, you kind of asked them to also do that. It would start to have this cumulative impact. And this commitment to non-harm, you can start to see when that really gets embedded. That's one of the things, as people mature in their practice, they start to not want to cause harm. Not because it's like a good thing to do, or because they, you know, it's not because there's an external authority. Just deeply inside, they feel the pain of causing harm to someone else. They see it in a way that it's so unrefutable. They feel that in a very, it's like it's almost like a poison that you give yourself if you cause harm. And that starts to be a powerful force in the world. And so just start to bring that into climate change and all its nuances, all its subtle ways and more obvious ways. And so finally we come back to renunciation. So this month's topic that we will explore last week and the rest of the weeks of this month. As you contemplate renunciation in relationship to climate change, reflect on those three unwholesome roots. You can kind of see what motivation do you need in this moment. Reflect on the roots. Okay, this action I'm contemplating, there's the option that's coming from greed. There's an option that's coming from fear and hatred. There's an action that's coming from delusion. And sometimes that, just that clarity of seeing, starts to wake us up, starts to sober us up, starts to give us the energy to act in a different way. Because we realize, as we practice and our practice deepens, we know that when we act from a place of greed, that perpetuates that greed. Hatred will perpetuate hatred. Delusion will continue that delusion. That's one of the powerful things about practice, is that once we start to see through things, we start to loosen that power of delusion. Instead of being this closed loop that just maintains itself, it starts to change. Directions go in our lives. And I talk to anyone who's been practicing for a while. They know that their life's course has somehow changed through just that inner awareness, that clarity of seeing in their own experience. They start to make different choices. We start to make different choices in our lives. Because on a deep level, we do realize that we're connected. We do realize that there's this profound reality of interrelationship, and causing harm to someone else is causing harm to myself. Generosity to another person is generosity to myself. And so renunciation just starts to make much more sense. It's not something I'm denying myself. It's an act of generosity. It's an act of non-harm. We see that in a very clear, powerful way. We also start to notice that disconnection of heart, the hardness of heart, of defensiveness, of separation, that also becomes less and less acceptable in our hearts. Not because someone told you it's not a good thing, but because you just know it in yourself. You just know it doesn't feel good to have that isolation, that separation. Because we know how really good it feels to have that connection, to have that interrelationship. And so climate change asks us to take it from all that we've been practicing for all your years of practice, you know, here in this interrelationships with your family, your friends, and strangers, to have that relationship for those people who haven't been born yet, those who have yet to come. You know, what are we leaving for them? What environment? What kind of world? And we can also reflect on these wholesome roots of generosity, of non-harm, when we're contemplating renunciation. Connecting with that sense of interconnection, really noticing it, sensing it, imagining it. If you can't have that direct reality of it, just imagining that interconnection, imagining how we are just really part of the same whole, connecting them across time. So as we practice with climate change and these three unwholesome roots and three paramis of generosity, of non-harm, and renunciation, start to just bring that into our actions of how we are in the world, and how do we communicate? How do we actually influence those in power? Try to convey our understanding in a heartfelt way. Because we have this true sense of generosity and establish this unwavering commitment to non-harm, renunciation just makes sense. Deep connection to others across time and geographic boundaries, that also renunciation just naturally makes sense. It follows without effort, without us having to do it. Release and give up from a place of joy. It's a place of joy of renouncing. It's really a tangible way for us to express our care for the future, to express our generosity and non-harm. All right, I've run out of words to say, so let's just sit quietly for a couple moments. And as we sit together, sensing into the felt sense of connection, the connection of those sitting next to you and in this room, those sharing this space who are sitting at home. It's a bit marvelous how it transcends space and distance. And as that sense of isolation fades and softens, we start to feel ourselves as part of a whole, of part of this human race. It starts to make sense to be generous. It makes sense to act from non-harm. Our hearts relax and open as we are announced and have renunciation of our greed, our hatred, our delusion. Allowing that to expand into the future. Thinking of the children that you know, perhaps your child or your grandchild or nieces and nephews, or just kids you see around. Imagine their kids. What world do we want to leave for them? And the children of those children, Right, so we have some space now for any sharing or questions you might have around this topic, around Dharma practice. If you're in the room, you can raise your physical hand, and online you can raise your virtual hand would be best. Yes, do you mind coming up so they can hear you online? Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Claire, and I'm kind of new to the whole Buddhist practice on and off within the last year, and I wanted to ask if there are any teachings around cooperation. Is that a theme that's explored? And the reason I'm asking has to do with your talk tonight. I'm currently taking a class on fossil fuels in the Middle East, and I recently learned that 70% of fossil fuels in the Middle East are sold to Asia. So my wider concern is that even if by some miracle the United States, you know, and the West gets our act together and uses other means of fuel, that won't necessarily stop the rest of the world from, you know, exporting to other areas. So I think it will really take worldwide diplomacy and cooperation to get all of us to, you know, be able to stop this issue. So I just wondered if that's just in our, you know, the small context of this setting, is cooperation a theme that we explore at all in Sims and in Buddhism? Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Claire. So that's a great question around cooperation. And a lot of the teachings, if you look at a lot of the suttas and a lot of the kind of liveness around the teachings, is often around community. So much of Buddhism is here today because of the community of monastics and their willingness to learn to relate to each other and how to have that sense of cooperation and community. And so how do you do that with you know, people who are not all together on the same page or that same willingness? And this is really the creativity of diplomacy and you know, all these different ways, these higher levels. And sometimes it's more of that, the stick, you know, sometimes you have to bring that, you have the greed work for you. Sometimes you have to work, you know, you have fear work for you. Sometimes you have to use, you know, open to generosity, open to that sense of non-harm. So there's so many different ways that it does operate. So it is a really vital question. How do we do that? I think it's hard for us, not to speak for the whole of the United States, but I think it's hard for us to feel completely integrity coming to the table when we're not, have our own house in order. So I think part of it's leading by example. Part of it is you know, boycotts. There's all those different realms I don't know about. But there is, if you have that energy for it, then sometimes things, those doors open up, those pathways open up. But ultimately, it's around, you know, I think big part of it is, how do you find that common ground? You know, how do you find that sense of commonality? And sometimes that's, we don't see that. It would just seem like we're at different polar opposites. And so a lot of it is finding, where is that common ground? How can we relate to people? How can we help people? You know, maybe sometimes we have to allow those who are in the coal industry, you know, how do we have ways for them to transition into other lines of work? How do we have, you know, support for renewable energy, you know, and that willingness to kind of give up the profit of keeping it like a closed technology, but that's freely sharing. So it's such an interesting thing, because I guess if we could take the people who are most against climate change and say, let's go take a trip into the future, they would say, okay, yeah, this is obvious. We need to change this. So it's, how do we make that? How do we change it when we still have time? Yeah, it's a powerful question. So what I tend to do with any of these kind of inquiries is first kind of learn it in my own heart, learn how I have my own way of having the other and having trouble communicating with the other. Learning how can I open my heart to them? How can I see their point of view and work in cooperation together? And then that starts to give a way to relate to bigger and bigger spheres, bigger and bigger levels. Thank you, Claire. All right, Iris, do you want to, you had your hand up, or do you want to wait?
I can wait.
Okay, you want to wait to do your announcement?
You
can do it now. Go ahead.
Okay, great. So my name's Iris, and I'm a member of the of our climate action group here at SIMS. And Tim, I want to thank you so much for giving this fifth annual climate-related Dhamma talk during Earth Day month, and for giving me this opportunity to share about SIMS's climate action group. So just sort of as an aside, I'm in several different climate groups, and SIMS is this climate group, our climate action group here, sort of reflects, I think, what Tim spoke about this evening in terms of really opening up our hearts to the suffering caused by the way we're living in the world, all of us, and approaching the climate crisis challenges from not only a place of wisdom, but from an open heart. But now to speak a bit more about our group, we've had a climate action group since May of 2018, so for almost 6 years. And at that time, several of us came together with concerns about the climate and with a desire to address the challenges from the ground of our Dhamma practice. Over the years, we've organized, sometimes in collaboration with other Buddhist and spiritual groups, many events, including film screening and discussions, a concert fundraiser for a climate project, several meditation walks in parks and forests, and other offerings, many of which you can view on our webpage. Our group's mainstay is our monthly meeting. And since the pandemic, we meet on Zoom. We have a short meditation time and then a longer check-in time sharing about our lives, our practice, and climate concerns. And then we spend time discussing books or articles or planning events. And the goal of the group is supporting each other in our concerns and efforts to understand, hold, and address the challenges in the unfolding crisis. Integrating the Buddhist teachings on compassion and wisdom grounds us with the willingness to face what's ahead with honesty and love and humor. And we invite you to join us, bringing your ideas, creativity, or worries. We meet on the second Tuesday night of the month from 7 to 8:30. And if you're interested in attending, you can go to the Engaged Buddhism tab on SIMS's website and click on either the Ways to Engage page or the Climate Action page and find out how to get on our email list to receive the Zoom link. And our next meeting is tomorrow night. Our next event is the meditation walk at Seward Park this coming Saturday, April 13th. And there's more information about it on our website. Also, we're in the process of planning our next event, which will be a climate food related event and demonstration later in the year. Thanks for listening. And if anyone has any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Thank you, Iris.
Thank you.
Yeah, so it's a way of engaging around this with like-minded people, with meditators, and exploring the different readings, different actions, and just having that sense of community as we all tackle and hold this. All right. And Jusli put the link on the chat there for those who can see that. I'll make it bigger for a second for those here in the room. Okay, any other questions? Yeah, Julie, go ahead.
Hi, Tim. I also want to thank you for making your talk centered around climate change. And Iris, I want to tell you how much I respect and appreciate everything that you do for the Climate Action Group. I really, really appreciate this perspective of, can we talk about our personal impact? Because my frustration around climate change has long been how common it is for us to all blame somebody else and never look at ourselves and our own actions. And, you know, I think it's really easy to feel like we can't make a difference in the world. We're just one person. But there's, as you touched on in your talk, Tim, you know, just knowing in our hearts that we're doing less harm, is so huge in and of itself. And when you really do start to look at the impact, it's pretty extraordinary what some basic actions can do to lessen your own personal food, you know, not just your food footprint, but your carbon footprint over time. So I just wanted to thank you for taking on that perspective and for touching on such an important topic.
Thank you, Julie. That's well expressed. And IRC had a response.
I do. Thanks, Julie, for your kind words. I do want to say that the fossil fuel companies would love for us to take all of the blame and that we should make all the changes. And so while it is important that we all do what we can, our system is geared towards extraction and expansion and growth and more energy. And so we also really need to look at the big systems that need changing. And yeah, and you know, I know you know this, Julie. I mean, I just read a headline today that ExxonMobil says that that we don't want to pay for the higher cost of better fuel, which is like completely not true. You know, and I'm not trying to demonize anyone specifically, but the industry is not, you know, is not being honest about their responsibility. So we really need to speak truth to power here.
Thank you, Iris. All right, any other questions or sharing? All right, I know this is sometimes a hard subject. It's a distressing subject. I can feel can see a lot of the somber faces. You know, so it's good to have that, you know, that, okay, this is taking this seriously. And we also have to balance, okay, what's going to lead us into action? You know, finding that balance. Sometimes it's really helpful to have that stick of the defilements to motivate us. Sometimes it's much more helpful to have that quality of the paramis leading into, okay, I really want to make a difference in a way, you know, focusing on that aspect. So seeing what's going to bring you into action, what's going to bring you into engagement. And that's ultimately the question we all have. Climate change is a powerful lens to focus on that, but all our aspects of our lives. Sometimes we focus on how not to cause harm, how not to act in a way that's unskillful. Sometimes we focus on how do I act in a generous way? How do I act in a way that's interconnected? And they start to both blend together. But just, you know, watching where's the energy? Where can I bring that energy forth? All right, just any last comments or questions before we call it a night? Yes. Okay, now I got a couple people up. Come on up, Nate, and then we can get you next.
Hey, so I don't have too much of a question, but maybe just some thoughts to share.
That sure.
It's been kind of an embarrassing long amount of time since I've remembered that I'm a citizen of the globe. And that reflection on, like, the future generations, people around me in here on Zoom. It's amazing that sense of interconnectedness, how the sense of clarity you get from that and like the steps to move forward and your willingness to do it. And you're not so caught up in my own like sense of scarcity, for example.
Right.
So I just wanted to.
Yeah. So that's I love how you said that. It's embarrassing how much we forget that we're part of this global community. But right there, there's a nice little handle there. Maybe that's the action is, okay, how can I remind myself on a regular basis that I'm just one little person on this huge planet? You know, how can I reflect on that?
The meta practice is great for that, I think.
Yeah, meta practice, that's a very powerful way, is imagining that meta just spreading through all the different countries. Mm-hmm. You know, and you maybe even name some of the countries and bringing that meta. That's one way to work with that sense of community or that sense of cooperation, is to bring that in. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then it makes more sense. Okay, yeah, I'm not alone in this. That my own personal, that little rub or that sense of giving up something, oh, I'm doing this for the whole group, the whole planet, you know, and all the people who are going to, after 100 years, are going to be a whole new set of people on the planet. Can I do it for them in the next 100 years? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Nate.
Thank you.
Sure, coming up? Come on up.
So I didn't really have a specific question, but you were talking about, like, you know, jobs that rely on fossil fuels. And I would say that I consider myself in that position. I'm a courier. I use my personal vehicle to deliver homemade food to customers. And when I was driving a less fuel-efficient vehicle, I would just constantly think about my fuel use, and I'd always be thinking about, like, the, you know, how much exhaust I'm putting out. I was driving an SUV that got 19 miles to the gallon, and it really honestly was hard on me. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't really share that with people, but, like, it was difficult because I was always thinking about it. And when I got a hybrid in November, I felt better. You know, I cut my fossil fuel use in half. I was spending like almost $600 a month on fuel alone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I drive a lot. And I'm just sitting here kind of wondering, like, should I be doing more? Like, I love driving. I love delivering. I get 40 miles to the gallon now, so I feel like I'm doing better in that department. But I'm just kind of open-endedly thinking, like, you know, what else should I be doing, you know? Like, where else can I help out?
Well, one thing to also reflect is that as a courier, how many cars aren't on the road because you're driving for them?
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, there's a lot of that 600 miles you do, you said a month?
$600 in fuel. I drive about 36,000 miles a year.
Yeah, so all the people that you're delivering food to, they don't have to get in their cars. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's I think that's an impact too, that you, it's good to reflect on it, because your car is a hybrid, you're you know, really leveraging that. Mm-hmm. So I think it's, you know, it's kind of like you have to kind of weigh our own, you know, means too. It's like, we don't want to go into bankrupt ourselves to get an electric car, for example, if that's really hurts ourselves. You know, how can we find that balance? So, you know, look at other ways to, you know, there's lots of resources around how to lower your carbon footprint. You know, LED lights and, you know, thermostats and all those kind of things. Just kind of look at all those and say, okay, what choices can I make differently? You know, we can look at the kinds of foods we eat. Maybe I can make some shifts there. You know, little bits of shifts start to add up. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's also the consideration of, like, with electric cars, you know, they don't put out emissions at all. But there's also other considerations, like our, you know, power grid infrastructure and, you know, lithium mining. So it's kind of sometimes difficult to make the right choice.
Yeah, sometimes it's like the lesser of evils, like, what's going to cause more harm or less harm, or which harm do I want to choose to do versus another harm. It's some of those, you know, like with our discussion last month on Sela, some of these ethical choices, it's like there's not a good answer that's completely causing no harm. Sometimes it's a choice of, okay, maybe I will kill this pest, but, you know, there's benefit from doing that. You know, so you have to kind of weigh that. And, you know, realize it's not going to be perfect.
Thank you.
Yeah. But the important thing is that you're engaged with it. You're thinking about it. So thank you for doing that. As I was, I've done these a number of these talks. We've done 5 of these iris. Is that right? And I missed last year because I was on a retreat or something like that. But it's kind of that balance between, you know, discouragement and giving up and just depression and versus, you know, how do we have enough energy to act? So I think I tend to be more in the air of like, hey, do what you can, celebrate that. Yeah, you can always do more, but, you know, keep that going. You know, and then there's our personal actions and there's the actions out into the bigger world, you know, speaking to people who are in authority and power, who have, you know, bigger decisions and have a bigger impact. You know, you can influence them. Lots enough people influencing, there would be some changes. What else? Any other reflections about climate change and despair and hope and inaction? Come on up.
My name's Taffy.
Hey, Taffy.
Hi. This is what's occurring to me tonight with the talk and the silence in Buddhism. I'm from Southern California, so I was living in an apartment in Venice, and people next door came in and bought our little complex of apartments. And on their very first day there, I saw the wife in our washroom shed, and she was dismantling the coin box. And I went to her and she's like, oh yeah, we're taking this out. She's Japanese. I'm a Buddhist, and I don't understand how in this country I could be charging you to do your laundry. Mm. This is something you have to do, and I'm a Buddhist. And so that was my first introduction to what it is to not live out of greed. Mm. They could have made a lot of money from that coin box.
Mm.
And the idea of what Buddhism is. So this is to speak to what you said about hope, action, the ripple effect of our actions, and making choices to live. Because in truth, I'm not connected to a power structure other than what I am connected to in terms of a power structure. So within my own circle, I know that ripple effects are huge. Mm. And I can't know. You were talking about living 7 generations out. I can't know what I can do, what I am doing today, how that 7 is going to feel it. But what I can do is feel that it will have effect.
Mm.
So I just wanted to share that.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, noticing the acts of kindness, of generosity. Yeah, those are very powerful. Calling out when someone, you know, makes a choice, and like getting a hybrid who's a courier. You know, saying that's really benefits the environment and benefits climate change, you know, the health of the climate. So that's a powerful way of doing that too. Wonder if we all did that. Every time we saw someone, a company doing the right thing, making a positive choice, because, you know, we don't get so much positive reinforcement. But I think many of us, that's really leads to our actions being much more, it feels good to have that positive feedback. All right, anyone else? All right, Emery, go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to say that one word that stood out from your talk for me, Tim, was this word hard-heartedness. And I don't know, it just kind of struck me and made me think of when and how my heart becomes hard. And, you know, it's usually because something's too painful to feel, right? Like, and so it's like, oh, I'm too busy to worry about that, or I'm already doing enough, or you know, lots of little ways of just like protecting. And so, and it, that can be vis-a-vis climate change or anything about life that is hard to bear, you know, hard to see and be with. And so I was just thinking about how important it is to feel that and to let the heart see and let the heart melt a little bit and feel the sadness, feel the heaviness and feel the pain of it. And let that sink in, I guess. And, you know, that can be really hard, but it also can be galvanizing, and it can lead to what I believe it was Taffy just said, where you really see these beautiful instances of people with an open heart. And like when you do that, when you, yeah, just like feel that and let that heart that wants to serve and wants to give and wants to let people do their laundry and wants to, you know, get a hybrid car, like that is really beautiful. And I just was thinking about all of that.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. That hardness of heart, yeah, that's, it's interesting what we do when we feel that arising, right? Because right at that moment when it arises, when it's like, it's something like climate change, you can feel that, oh, I'm kind of holding my breath, I'm kind of withdrawing from that, or I'm that, there's the fear and the overwhelm. That's that form of that hardness of heart. And so learning to kind of meet that and open to it in a way that it starts to be fully acknowledged, fully felt, and starting to soften, that's kind of that, the art of our practice. Because sometimes we can have these things that harden our heart, and we can relate to them in a way that actually makes it more hard, or we become more contracted, more in despair, more paralysis, more depressed. Or we can meet it in a way that is acknowledging it and starting to loosen it. That's one way of defining why it's effort. And, you know, climate change is a powerful lens to look at that, because it's, we really realize, wow, this is a big deal. Yeah, it overwhelms. It's so easy to be overwhelmed. But if we can sit with it, can we open to it? You know, having a sense of connection, you know, relating to people to the point it starts to shift. I think that's the key piece, is the art of seeing something and relating to it and perceiving when it starts to shift, when it starts to loosen and soften, versus when it starts to contract. And then you just notice, where did I put my energy in a way? And as human beings, we have to, unfortunately, you can't just learn one way to do it. We have to always be kind of freshening how we meet it, a different way maybe each time. One moment it might be, as Taffy was talking about, really acknowledging someone's act of generosity, the act of interconnection, you know, the act of letting go of a greed perspective. You know, another time it might be more, you know, looking at some concrete ways. Sometimes it's talking to someone who can help inspire you or help direct your actions. So there's so many different ways. So that's, but the art is like noticing, not being stopped by the fear, not being stopped by the hardness of heart, but being willing to work with it until it shifts, until it moves into an opening of the heart. Thank you, Emery. All right, anyone else? Come on up. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Armin. I don't have a comment about today's discussion, but I just wanted to share a story. Last week, as I was kind of coming out of the meditation class, I take a bus home. And as I get seated, I see kind of a young gentleman, and next to him is a pretty senior lady. She's feeling very sick, very ill. She's extremely intoxicated. I think a person without a home. And, you know, I sit there. I'm pretty close to them. Gradually, people start moving away because, you know, she starts throwing up. And this young gentleman is still there, kind of seated next to her. At first, I thought, you know, he kind of knows her. I kind of start to find out that, no, you know, he's been there for 2 hours. He was just on his way to home, recognizes that she's not feeling well, recognizes that she also doesn't have a place because she just keeps taking the bus back and forth. And she's, you know, he's on the phone trying to get the police or the cops to help her out. But what just continued to amaze me is that, you know, as people just got away, he just stood by her the entire time. It's a beautiful act of generosity. Even at some point, like the liquid started to get to me and like to my shoes. And at that point, I also stepped away. And it kind of feels terrible to do that because I could imagine how she felt like being in that moment where everybody walks away and just on top of feeling terrible, you also see kind of people stepping away. Mm-hmm. And at some point, there were a few stops away from kind of where he said that the police will come to help her. And she wanted to see where it is. And so he kind of held his phone to show the map. And she kind of just looked at it briefly, but just more, she just grabbed his hand and kissed it. And I just felt like, man, that's just so beautiful. Like that's all she could do at the moment to kind of repay his act of generosity, but just like kind of good hearts from both sides.
Yeah, beautiful.
And all I could just say was to thank him for his kindness and wish her well. But yeah, just a really good hearts.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. It's a powerful story. And yeah, it opens our hearts to hear that and inspires us too to make a difference. Yeah, wonderful. Thank you. All right, anyone else before we say goodnight? All right, thank you for your engagement and all the sharing, you know, powerful sharing. Next week, Steve Wilhelm will be here continuing this topic of renunciation. And then I forget who's the next couple teachers. I don't think I'm coming back this month. I'll be back in May. All right, so have a wonderful evening and, you know, find that sweet spot between urgency, action, kindness. You know, how can I still act? How can I still, you know, take care of what needs to be taken care of? All right, thank you all.